Hi, everyone. It's a great pleasure to have Akshayaram Srinivasan to visit us and to give a talk. Akshayaram is actually a rising superstar in cryptography. I think he's only a second or third year grad student. And he's a student of Sanjam Garg at UC Berkeley. And today he's going to give a talk about two-round MPC from minimal assumptions. So after Akshay. Yeah.
Thanks, Ranjit, for the introduction. Thanks for having me here. I am Akshayaram, and I'm going to talk about two-round secure multi-party computation from minimal assumptions. And this is joint work with my advisor, Sanjam Garg. So let me start this talk by telling you a story. So we have a cell phone manufacturing company, let's call it as Company X, which has launched a new model of cell phone in the market. This model is a big hit, and the sales of this model have skyrocketed. So this cell phone company is really happy about it. But there are some rumors that this model actually dysfunctions in certain use cases and causes radiation-related health issues to its users. So this news somehow reaches the company, and the company is scared because if these are true, then it will lose all its reputation. But somehow it wants to validate this claim. To validate this claim, it wants to calculate the number of users of this model of cell phone who have developed radiation-related health issues. If this number is significantly high, then the company will decide to recall this model from the market. So to calculate this number, it approaches the leading hospitals across the country and asks for the list of patients so that it can compute this number. But the HIPAA Act forbids the hospitals from sharing such confidential information about the patients to any third party. So what do we have now? The company somehow wants to calculate the number of users of this model who have developed some radiation-related health sickness. But the hospitals don't want to share details like the age, name of the patients to this company. So the answer to this problem is the focus of this talk, which is a secure computation protocol. Secure computation allows the company to learn this number, as well as provide the guarantees to the hospital that the company only learns this number and nothing else about the patients. So yes.
You want to do this pairwise or?
I want to do it with all the hospitals. I just want to calculate the number of patients in the hospitals who have used this model and have developed so-and-so diseases.
Right, but will the company interact with each of them individually?
Yeah, it can interact with each of them pairwise, or okay. Each of them could, in fact, interact with themselves, and so on. So, secure computation, or secure multi-party computation in more general terms, allows a set of users, let's say we have N users in this setting, each of them having their own private input. The private input of user I is denoted by XI, and they wish to compute a joint function on their private inputs. So in the previous case, the users are the set of hospitals and the company. The private input of the hospitals is its list of patients. And the private input of the company is the list of users for this particular model of cell phone. And the function that they want to compute is the number of users of this model who have developed so-and-so diseases. And we just want to compute the number, and nothing else about the patients should be revealed. So what is the security guarantee that we want to provide? So the security guarantee is that even if a subset of users get corrupted, where the size of the subset could be as large as n minus 1, where n is the total number of users, the corrupted users should not learn anything about the honest party's inputs apart from what is leaked by this function's output. So in the previous case, even if the company somehow wants to learn the identity of a user, Secure computation disallows the company from learning anything about the identities of the patients. All that is learned is this number, and nothing else about the private inputs of the hospitals are leaked. So secure multi-party computation is one of the major areas in cryptography, and almost all known cryptographic primitives, like including zero-knowledge proofs, probabilistic encryption, program obfuscation, can be modeled as special cases of MPC. So this is one of the very active areas in cryptography. So let's see what is known about multi-party computation. Way back in the late 1980s, almost 30 years ago, Goldrake, Micali, and Wigderson gave a protocol for securely computing any function f. However, the round complexity of this protocol grows with the depth of the circuit representation of the function that we want to compute. So let me first explain to you what I mean by the round complexity. So the round complexity is the number of sequential messages exchanged between the parties. So if I have three parties, and let's say in the first party sends a message to the second party, depending on this message, the second party sends another message to the third party, and the third party can then again send a message to the first party. So the number of rounds of this protocol is actually three, because the number of sequential messages is three. The second party cannot send a message to the third party unless it receives the message from the first party. Okay, so now we know what is the number of rounds, and let me explain to you what I mean by the depth of the circuit representation. So we model the function, we call the function that we want to compute as f, right? The joint function that has to be computed on the private inputs of the party. If you write this function f as a Boolean circuit, using AND, OR, and NOT gates, then the depth of this Boolean circuit is what I mean by the depth of the circuit representation. So the number of rounds of the Goldrake, Micali, and Wigderson protocol, which we'll call as the GMW protocol, grows with the depth of the circuit representation. So why do we care about the number of rounds? Or in other words, why is the number of rounds important for applications? For high latency applications, the number of rounds is the major factor in determining the efficiency of the protocol. So let's say that even in the previous scenario we considered, there is a hospital in Seattle and there is another hospital in New York. And they want to send a message from Seattle to New York and another message back from New York to Seattle. So it takes a few hundred milliseconds for this message to travel to New York, another few hundred milliseconds for another message to travel back. So the meantime, this party cannot do anything. So it has to just keep on waiting. And if the number of rounds is in fact of the order of thousands, then a lot of time is wasted by the parties in just waiting for the messages to go back and forth. And for a complicated function such as the AES circuit, the depth of the circuit could be in the order of thousands. So the GMW protocol will take order of 1,000 rounds to compute even a AES circuit. And unlike the computational power, which is growing according to the Moore's law, and the bandwidth of the networks, which is growing, which is improving almost every day by using better materials, the latency of the networks is somewhat fixed and cannot be improved beyond a certain point. So this is because the latency is determined by the geographical distance between the parties and the speed of light, both of which cannot be improved. So the takeaway message from this slide is that for high latency applications, the number of rounds is very important. And we need to optimize the number of rounds in order to have a practical multi-party computation protocol. Okay. So a natural question would be to what is the minimum number of rounds for doing secure computation? Can we do secure computation in just a single round? This would be ideal because we can do a computation without any security, of course, in a single round. Because all the parties can just send their inputs to every other party, and the parties can locally compute the function. But this does not provide any security because the party's input is leaked in its entirety to all the parties. And the question would be that can we emulate this in a secure setting? So can we do secure computation in just a single round? But unfortunately, there exist certain functions that cannot be securely computed in a single round. So the best that we can hope for is to do secure computation in two rounds. So the question is that can we do secure computation in two rounds? The answer to this question has been known for a long time, but for a special case of two-party computation. So in the two-party setting, we have one party with private input x1, another party with private input x2, and they wish to compute a joint function on the private inputs. As before, the security notion is that even if one of the parties get corrupted, it does not learn anything about the other party's input apart from what is leaked by F. It is well known that a primitive called as garble circuits, which I'll explain, another primitive called as two-round oblivious transfer, gives a two-round protocol for secure two-party computation. And we just saw that two-round is optimal because we cannot do secure computation in a single round. Okay. So are there any questions about the setting or the... We'll go on to this result in a bit more details.
Okay. So you're going to show us two-round multi-party.
Yes.
But what was the previous best for multi-party? In terms of number of rounds?
We had two-round protocols, but under stronger assumptions.
And before that?
Even before that, it was, let's say, 7 to 8 rounds,
I guess. 7 to 8.
Yeah. Okay, so let's start with garble circuits. So garble circuits is a foundational concept introduced in this seminal paper of Yao. And it's one of the most important tools in any cryptographer's toolkit, I would say. And it has found applications in almost all areas of cryptography. So let's see what we mean by a garble circuit. So we have a function f that takes n bits of input and outputs m bits. Garble circuits allow you to encode this function f into a garbled circuit f tilde along with a pair of labels for each input wire of this function f. So since f has n bits of input, this garble circuit, we have n pairs of labels. And each pair has one label corresponding to the bit 0, another pair which corresponds to the bit 1. Okay. So this garble circuit F tilde, along with the labels corresponding to the bits of an input X, allow one to evaluate and compute F of X. So let's first consider a plain Boolean circuit without any garbling. So let's say it has n input wires, and giving either zeros or ones to each of those input wires allow you to evaluate the function and get its output. And garble circuit is somewhat very similar to a Boolean circuit in this respect. So the garble circuit F tilde, instead of choosing the actual values of the inputs, you choose the labels corresponding to the bits of the input. If your first bit of the input is 0, then you choose the label corresponding to 0. Let's say the last bit of your input is 1, then you choose the label corresponding to 1. So if you choose these labels from 0 or 1 according to the bits of your input, then there is a special evaluation procedure that allows you to obtain f of x. So are there any questions about this? Okay. But the special property of the garble circuit is that this F tilde, along with these labels, leaks only F of X. So this is not true for a plain circuit, right? Because if you give a plain circuit and the bits of the input, then it leaks everything about the circuit and the input. But the garble circuit is special in this respect that the garble circuit f tilde along with these labels leaks only f of x. So you can treat this garble circuit along with these labels as a black box that hides everything about f and x apart from just f of x. And importantly, this is true only if I have a single label per each input wire. Even for a one input wire, if I get access to both the labels, then all security bits are off. Okay. So we have seen garble circuits, which is one of the primitives for two-party computation. Let's see the other primitive, which is oblivious transfer. So oblivious transfer is a very specific two-party computation. So there is one party, which is called as the sender, which has strings M0 and M1 as input. And there is another party, which is called as the receiver, which has a bit B as input. So in this functionality, which we will call as OT, the receiver with the bit B learns the string corresponding to the bit B, namely MB. And the sender does not get any output. So this receiver is oblivious about the other string of the sender, namely M1 minus B. And the sender is oblivious about the choice bit of the receiver. So that's why it's called as an oblivious transfer. And for this talk, we'll be specifically interested in two message oblivious transfers. So there is a message that is sent from the receiver to the sender in the first round, which somehow encodes this bit B. And there is another message that is sent from the sender to the receiver, which will encode the two strings M0 and M1. And at the end of the two messages, the receiver can obtain the string MB, and it does not learn any information about the string M1 minus B. And we know two message oblivious transfers from a variety of number theoretic assumptions, such as decisional Diffie-Hellman, RSA, quadratic residuosity, and so on. We also know constructions from lattices. So is this clear? Okay, so we saw garble circuits and we saw two-round oblivious transfer. Let's see how to put these two primitives together to construct a two-round, two-party computation protocol. So in this talk, we'll just consider a simplified case where the inputs to the parties are just single bits. So x2 is a single bit and x1 is a single bit. And the parties want to compute a function on these two bits. Let's call it as f. We would like to do this in just two rounds. So in the first round of this protocol, the party with the input bit x2 sends an oblivious transfer message with the bit x2 encoded. So recall that the first message of an oblivious transfer is from the receiver to the sender, and it encodes the receiver's choice bit somehow. So it sends the receiver oblivious transfer message with its choice bit x2 encoded. Now this party has to respond so that this party can get f of x1 comma x2, and it does not learn anything about x1. That is the security that we want to guarantee. So this party garbles the function f that they want to compute. It obtains the garble circuit f tilde along with the labels for its input wires. So recall that since f had two bits of input, x1 and x2 are just bits, there are two pairs of labels. Right? There is one pair which corresponds to this guy's input, and there is another pair which corresponds to this guy's input. And so if this guy obtains the garble circuit f tilde along with the label corresponding to x1 and the label corresponding to x2, the garble circuits allow him to evaluate f of x1 comma x2. So for this guy to choose the label corresponding to X1 is just simple. He just chooses the label or his input wire based on the bit X1. But this guy has to learn the label corresponding to his input bit, X2. But this, he cannot send X2 directly to this guy because he will leak X2 in its entirety to the first party, which we want to avoid. So that's where an oblivious transfer comes into place. So the oblivious transfer, recall that we had sent the first round message of the oblivious transfer using X2 as the choice bit. So if the first party sends the OT message with the string labels corresponding to 0 and 1 as the message strings, then he can obtain the label corresponding to X2 using the reconstruction algorithm of oblivious transfer. And we have the guarantee that the label corresponding to the other bit is hidden, 1 minus X2. So this is just a two-party computation. So are there any questions? Because we'll be using garble circuits and two-round OT extensively in the later part of the talk.
In your definition of OT, you had that there's two messages, M0 and M1, and you chose between them. What's
yes.
the analog here?
So here the message is X2, the choice bit is X2, and the two messages are the labels corresponding to 0 and 1. So he can get the label corresponding to X2 based on that. Right? Okay. So coming back to the question that we asked, can we do secure computation in two rounds? We just saw that for the case of two parties, we can do this. And we will be interested in the multi-party setting. So for multiple parties, this question is known under stronger assumptions, such as indistinguishability obfuscation, witness encryption, or learning with errors, and so on. We had a recent result along with my advisor where we constructed two-round multi-party computation from bilinear maps. But the question that we are interested in this talk is that can we construct a two-round secure multi-party computation protocol from the same assumptions under which two-round two-party secure computation exists, which is just oblivious transfer and garble circuits. And in this work, we show that we can indeed construct a two-round protocol for secure multi-party computation from any two-round oblivious transfer. And our result is more general. We can get a R-round multi-party computation protocol from any R-round oblivious transfer. And this gives the first three-round multi-party computation protocol from trapdoor permutations, which is just RSA. And interestingly, if the oblivious transfer is maliciously secure, where by malicious security, I mean that even if the corrupted parties deviate arbitrarily from the protocol is still secure. So if this oblivious transfer satisfies this stronger notion of security, then the protocol that we have is also secure under this stronger security notion. And prior to our work, all known two-round secure multi-party computation required a stronger assumption called, with satisfying this malicious security, required non-interactive zero-knowledge proofs. And ours is the first construction which does not require non-interactive zero-knowledge proofs. So non-interactive zero-knowledge proofs is a zero-knowledge proof, if you have heard about zero-knowledge proofs, where a single message is sent from the prover to the receiver. And that hampers the efficiency because you need to do an NP reduction to a specific NP hard problem. But ours does not suffer from these limitations. And interestingly, the protocol also works for RAM programs without having to convert a RAM program to a circuit. So if you have to convert a RAM program to a circuit, then it has a cubic blow up in the circuit size when compared to the running time of the RAM program. And the size of the circuit should also grow with the size of the entire database. And in the days of big data, the the size of the database could be huge, of the order of gigabytes and so on. And if you want to have a circuit implementing any RAM program, then the circuit has to grow with the size of the database. Ours does not suffer from this limitation because we can directly work for RAM programs. So are there any questions about the results? We'll then go into the details of how we do this.
Just to be clear, so the oblivious transfer is for two parties?
Yes, for two parties.
So we two-party to get multi-party?
Yes. So our results keep the multi-party computation in the same scale as a two-party computation. So there are no more questions. We can go into the details of how we do this. OK, so let me give you the high-level idea behind the construction. So we take an arbitrary round secure computation protocol. Let's take the Goldrick-Mikali-Wigderson protocol, where the protocol, the number of rounds of this protocol could be arbitrary. But we just want it to be a polynomial number. And we take such a protocol, and we squish the round complexity to just two broadcast rounds. So in the first round, every party broadcasts a message. At the second round, every party again does a broadcast based on the first round message. And at the end of two rounds, they can compute the functionality. OK, so for this talk, let me make some assumptions on the protocol that we want to squish. This will already convey the main ideas behind the result. So in the protocol fee, which could run an arbitrary number of rounds, in each round of this protocol, a single party, called as the designated party, broadcasts a bit to every other party. And every other party copies this bit into its state. Right? These two assumptions are generic. The third assumption that I will be making is that the bit that is computed is a NAND gate on two bits of the local state. Okay, so with these assumptions in place, let's look at a toy execution of the protocol fee for the case of three parties. Our protocol works for arbitrary number of parties, but let's just concentrate on three parties for this talk. So let's say in the first round, the first party is the designated party, which computes a NAND on two bits of the local state. It broadcasts these bits to the other two parties. Other two parties copy this bit to their local state. So in the second round, let's say the third party is the designated party, which computes a NAND on two bits of its local state, where one of the bits could be the NAND which was broadcasted. Because at the end of the first round, this bit is copied into the local state. So this party again computes a NAND on two bits of the local state, broadcasts this, and this process continues for T rounds. And at the end of the T rounds, the parties can compute the output of the protocol from their own local states. Okay? So this protocol has some form of security that we want to ensure, that we want to hide the input bits to the NAND gate. Say that the bit that was broadcasted is 1, then we want to hide whether it is NAND on 00 or 01 or 10, because all of them lead to NAND being 1. So we want to ensure this kind of security still holds, but we would like to squish the round complexity from T to just 2. Okay, are there questions? Okay, so we do this using two main ideas. And let me explain the first idea. So the first idea is to implement each round of this big protocol fee using a sequence of garble circuits, where each garble circuit in the sequence is contributed by one party. So let's look into the working of the garble circuits for the round I. So this garble circuit implements round I, where the first party is the designated party. It takes as input the local state of the parties before the execution of round I. Recall that the local state involves all the messages exchanged between the parties in the first I minus 1 rounds. So let's say that it takes the local state of the parties before the execution of this round I. It does the computation corresponding to the round I. And then it outputs the labels corresponding to the updated local state. These labels are in fact the input labels for the next sequence of garble circuits that implement round I plus 1. Okay, so starting with the first garble circuit and the labels corresponding to the initial local state of every party, I can evaluate the first set of garble circuits, get the labels corresponding to the updated local state as output of these garble circuits. I can then run the second set of garble circuit using these labels. And I can run all these in the sequence. So this somehow gives a non-interactive way of executing this protocol using these garble circuits. So once the parties send these garble circuits, the parties can locally compute these functions, evaluate these garble circuits. Are there questions? Okay. So, but there is a problem with this approach. Recall that each round of this protocol not only involves local computation, but also communication between the parties. Namely, that the NAND which was computed on the local state of this party must be communicated to these two parties. And the labels that are output by these two garble circuits must somehow reflect this NAND computation. Right? Because otherwise, the local state would not be updated correctly. Which means that there must be a mechanism by which this garble circuit can speak, and these two garble circuits can listen to what this guy speaks. So we implement this using OTs. And that is the second main idea. Okay, so let's just consider round I, where the first party computes an AND on two bits of the local state. Let me also assume that A and B are part of its own input, the initial private input of the party. We need to hide A and B, and we just need to communicate an AND on A and B to these two garble circuits. So since a single bit of the local state is updated at the end of every round, because NAND output of NAND is just a single bit. Let me call the labels corresponding to this bit by L0 and L1 for the second garble circuit. So if NAND on A and B is 0, then this garble circuit should output L0. Otherwise, it should output L1. Right? So, to explain this again, so this garble circuit must output the labels corresponding to its updated local state. And this updated local state should reflect this NAND bit. So this NAND bit is updated in a single bit of the local state, because single bit, output of NAND is just a single bit, and the parties just have to update a single bit in their local state. And let me call the labels corresponding to this bit of the local state by L0 and L1. So if NAND on A and B is 0, then this party has to output L0. Otherwise, it has to output L1. Okay. So now we will be allowing this party to output label corresponding to NAND by making use of the first round of the protocol. So recall that A and B are parts of the input of this party. I'm assuming that A and B are parts of the input. Okay. So in the round one of the compile protocol, which is going to help the garble circuit in outputting the label corresponding to NAND of A and B, this party, the first party, which computes the NAND gate in round I, sends two bits. The bit A, which is the first bit of the NAND, XORed with a random bit RA, and B, XORed with a random bit RB. So since RA and RB are random, A and B are information theoretically hidden by the security of one-time pad. In addition to these two bits, this guy is going to send a bunch of OT1 messages acting as the receiver. Okay, so let me explain what is the choice bit in these OT1 messages. So he sends four OT1 messages. So the first OT1 message encodes the choice bit, which is NAND computed on 0 XOR with RA, 0 XOR with RB, where RA and RB are the masking bits of A and B. Okay. Similarly, the second bit that is encoded is NAND on 0 XOR with RA and 1 XOR with RB. So I just change it 00 to 01, 10, 11. It's just like a truth table. For if I call this bit as alpha, and this bit, if this call this bit as alpha and this bit as beta, then the OT1 message corresponding to alpha beta entry is NAND on alpha XOR with RA, beta XOR with RB. So these messages, I claim, are sufficient for this guy to output NAND on A and B. So let's see how. So the garble circuit for this guy, similarly for the third guy, we'll just concentrate for the second guy, has the bit A XOR with RA, B XOR with RB hardwired, as well as the OT1 messages which were sent in the first round, which is corresponding to these four values. Right? Now, this guy also has the labels L0 and L1. This guy has to somehow enable, this guy has to output the label corresponding to NAND on A and B.
So the OT1 messages are the receiver messages?
Yes, yes.
So it's sent from the receiver?
It's sent by the first party acting as the receiver.
And you still haven't told us?
Sender's message, yes. I haven't told the sender's message.
So this is, they're going to do four OTs? Is that what I should think of?
It's just four messages, which are hardwired, and it's going to choose one of them. Let me explain this. So this guy knows A XOR with RA and B XOR with RB at this point, and he sends the OT2 message, which is the sender's OT message, which has the label L0 and L1 encoded, which are the messages, but it sends with respect to that OT corresponding to A XOR with RA and B XOR with RB. So the alpha, beta entry corresponding to which it sends the sender OT message is going to be with respect to A XOR with RA and B XOR with RB. So let me explain this again. Recall that the alpha, beta entry of the OT is NAND on alpha XOR with RA, beta XOR with RB. So if I plug alpha to be A XOR with RA and B XOR with RB, right? I'm going to get the OT1, which correspond to NAND on A XOR with RA, XOR with RA. RA is going to get cancelled. Similarly, B XOR with RB, XOR with RB. RB and RB is going to get cancelled. And I'll get the choice bit, which is encoded here, is just NAND on A and B, which is precisely what we wanted. Right? Are there questions, or should I go over this again? Yes. Okay. So the first round messages that were sent is clear, right?
Yeah.
Right. So now this guy has A XOR with RA, B XOR with RA.
Party.
The second party's labels.
So L0 and L1 are just random strings?
Yes, you can think about them as random
strings. This is coming from the previous state?
Yes. No, this is going to be the input for the next state. Yes. So if NAND on A comma B is 0, then I should output L0. Otherwise, I should output
L. Finally, there's only one label which is going to be output.
This is going to be one label that can be decrypted in some sense.
Right, and that will give the next set. So the output will be one of L0 L1.
It should be one of L0 and L1. Yes. And the other label should be hidden, because otherwise, if both the labels are hidden, then security of garbled circuits is off. Right?
Whole box is the garbage circuit?
Yes, this is going to be a garbage circuit. So this has A XOR with RB, B XOR with RB, and so on, hardware. Good. So these OT messages constructed in a special way. So the alpha beta entry of the OT1 correspond to NAND on alpha XOR with RA, beta XOR with RB. Right? So if I reveal, if I substitute alpha to be A XOR with RA, B XOR with RB, what is the message is encoded in this OT? It will be A XOR with RA, XOR with RA, which is just A, B XOR with RB, XOR with RB, which is just B.
What is the input to this garbled circuit?
This garbled circuit will take as input the labels from the previous state.
So the labels are all, you assume that the labels are already there. So the state contains labels.
No, the state is encoded in terms of labels. So the input is just the state of the computation. So this will be in terms of the labels for a garbled circuit. So if I just send the OT2 message as the sender, where I have L0 and L1 as the messages, and if I choose the OT1 message corresponding to alpha being A XOR with RA and B XOR with RB, then I will get the OT1 corresponding to NAND on A and B. So this is just an XOR trick which is happening. And the analogy that I can give you to this trick is the point and permute technique in the BMR circuits. So this is very, very close to the point and permute technique there, which is just XOR magic which is happening. So now this guy has output the OT2 message corresponding to NAND on A and B. And if this guy outputs the randomness generating for that OT1 message, then every party can get the label corresponding to NAND on A and B. So even the third party, which is evaluating these garbled circuits, can get the label corresponding to NAND on A and B for this thing. So, are there any questions?
Still like a few months behind.
Okay.
So the OT2 is the sender message, and this guy already has L0, L1. So
yeah, this guy has L0 and L1. Yeah, this guy acts as a sender. This guy already acted as the receiver in the first round. This guy already acted as the receiver, and it sent the OT1 messages in the first round itself. So this is
so
going to happen in
the OT1 messages from the first guy inside the garbage.
So I have in the first round of the compile protocol, I will have the OT1 messages being sent.
Right.
Now the second round is just the garbled circuits, which are going to be broadcasted. So if I have these garbled circuits, then I can non-interactively implement the protocol by myself,
yes,
locally. Because these garbled circuits will already...
But whoever is evaluating OT2...
Yes.
OT2 was the value that is being used by... I mean, OT2 is a...
Sender's message.
Yeah, it's a sender's message,
yes.
Right? It doesn't give the output.
It doesn't give the output, but this guy is going to output the randomness generating for OT1.
Where is it?
Oh, so this guy has the randomness for generating all of these OT1 messages.
He's outputting like what?
So he's outputting the randomness corresponding to OT1 of NAND on ANB.
Okay, by outputting you mean like sending the message?
He reveals the randomness in the clear.
He
broadcasts. The garble circuit outputs the randomness in the clear.
Randomness for what again? For the OT1?
Yes. So you're right. So if I just have the OT2 message, I cannot learn L0 or L1 unless I have the randomness used for generating the OT1 message.
Okay.
You can think about it as a lossy encryption scheme. Unless I have the secret key for this OT1 message, I cannot get the message corresponding to the OT. And this guy will output the randomness. And so if this guy outputs the randomness, the security of that particular OT is completely gone. Because I will reveal everything about that message choice bit.
But you're revealing it only for one OT. That's
which is revealing for only one OT. And we can still use the security. So are there any other questions? So we have come to almost the end of the talk. So to conclude, we gave a two-round protocol for secure multi-party computation from minimal assumptions, which is just two-round oblivious transfer. And some of the interesting open questions from this talk is, can we improve the communication complexity of this protocol? So the communication complexity is rather large because it's for each NAND gate, I need to send three garble circuits or n garble circuits in total. So can we improve the communication complexity? And other interesting question would be to have a concretely efficient protocol for this one. And we are making some progress towards this thing. So we are actually trying to make it concretely efficient. So that concrete efficiency means that we can almost implement it. Yes. And that's it. Thanks for your attention.
So, do you plan to have an implementation soon?
Yeah, we are working on the implementation.
How's the work going?
Yeah, we just started and then working.
So, you didn't talk about the RAM programs?
Yes, the RAM programs is almost. So you're asking how does the RAM program work?
Yeah.
So instead of using a garbled circuit, we'll be using a garbled RAM.
Oh, for the OT1 stuff. But
so the OT1s have garbled circuits, right? Here for the circuit kit.
Yeah.
So here they will be implementing each step circuit using a garbled RAM program. Yeah, we can.
Oh, because from this. Right.
Yes, we have efficient garbled RAM schemes.
Any further questions? It's a very dense talk. Is it? Yeah,
yes.
Thank the speaker again.